almost the weakest. Yeah.
Subcommittee will come to order. First bill on our work session is House Bill 2075. When we completed our earlier work on the bill, we were awaiting the LC amendments, and we had, I think, an issue of possible loss of federal funding. Question dealing with the appropriateness of the proposed offenses that were described as affecting the board's power to retain jurisdiction beyond the time of a finding that the individual is no longer suffering from mental illness or disease or defect, or was not in a life-threatening kind of situation. Why don't we just take the LC amendments and work our way through, and as we come to those points, Linda, where the issues remain, we'll settle them at this time.
Okay. Does everybody have copies of the LC amendments dash two? If you don't, I have a few more extras. Okay, I thought a way that I could go through these is to go along the way that I sent the instructions to to go through the instructions to legislative council that I sent down, which encompassed the motions that were made by the committee. Basically, the chair had suggested that this be, that it be amended in a way that would just start over with the bill as opposed to trying to fit it into the present text of the current bill. The first that I noted was to add another exclusion to the term mental disease or defect, which is ORS 161-295, which is section 3 of the bill, to the effect that the mental disease or defect also does not include disorders characterized only as personality disorders. And you see that language in lines 23 and 24 on page 1 of the amendments. The next two were sort of broad instructions to, first of all, when we were thinking of the regular bill, that we were eliminating any change in the present insanity test, and we were to delete any modifications in the procedure that by which the defense of mental disease or defect, its timing, method of resolution, etc., were to be handled. Regarding the verdict, the motion was to change to a guilty except for insanity, and to make that change in what we're calling an insanity defense wherever appropriate throughout the statutes for consistency. That change is made to begin with. You'll find it in subsection 1 of section 3, which is the existing test, which now says the person's found not responsible if at the time of their conduct as a result of mental disease and so forth. Now it would be a person is guilty except for insanity if as a result of the disease and at the time engaging conduct and so forth with the test. That same change is it's accommodated throughout the bill. Sections 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 all have changes which basically are replacing references to responsibility, criminal responsibility, not responsible due to mental disease or defect with appropriate language. Do you want to take up the issue of that change in the verdict at this point? Okay. The issue that did come up had been the concern from the mental health division that if we changed to this verdict, calling it guilty, even though it said except for and so forth, that we would possibly lose the federal monies that we now get for people who are presently found not responsible under our existing verdict. And I was in contact with the people from the Department of Keith Putman and Jan Curry and Fred Olson from the Health Division and he is here and has information about federal regulations and the analysis that they've done in conjunction with consultation with the Attorney General, that, as I understand it, it is their opinion that we would most likely lose our federal money if we were to make this change. Mr. Olson is here and has materials to present to the committee.
All right, let's have that analysis now.
My name is Fred Olson from the Mental Health Division. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd like to briefly go over this to explain what we found in doing a fiscal analysis of these proposed amendments for you. Now, originally, under this House Bill 2075, we anticipated that the population would increase in the hospitals, and because of the increase, this would increase both costs to the Mental Health Division, and it would increase the amount of revenue that would be involved. Now, we found under these amendments, the increased population would not occur. So first off, this did reduce both the cost increase and reduce the amount of revenue loss. Now, beyond that, though, essentially, the position is that from a revenue standpoint, the bill, as the amendments are proposed, at least to the bill, would not change the picture as far as a revenue loss. And the reason for this is that both under the interpretations of present state law and because of the interpretations by the federal government as far as billing for Medicare and Medicaid, we do bill these patients when they are eligible for either Medicare or Medicaid. We bill those benefits on their behalf. And the federal government has interpreted, as well as the state law, that if the verdict is guilty, then the person or the resources cannot be billed. Now, in order to confirm how this was working or get a better idea of how statutes might be interpreted on a national basis, we did contact some other states. They are listed here in the material that was passed out. The states contacted are Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. All of these states had implemented a statute whereby patients were found guilty but mentally ill and placed in a mental hospital. In each of those states, they found that they could not bill the patient, and so it was not entirely clear what the status would have been under the federal Medicare and Medicaid programs in those states. However, it seems clear in the fact that the federal government has published rules saying that if a person is found guilty, the cost in the hospital cannot be paid. And they interpret this to mean that if a person were sent to the hospital instead of being sent to a penal institution, for instance, they're still considered to be a prisoner and the cost cannot be paid. And for that reason, we felt also that we should confirm this with the Attorney General's office. We contacted Mr. Walt Berry, who is counsel for the Mental Health Division, and he went over the interpretation. He is, of course, familiar with the reimbursement laws. He went over these interpretations with us and does agree with our interpretation. So for this reason, we were recommending that a verdict of not guilty or something of that nature be included in the bill, simply because this would should prevent the revenue loss. Now, to give a better idea of what is involved, now not every patient in the program is involved, but the approximate loss of revenue to the state would be $663,000 during the 83-85 biennium and $1.1 million in the 85-87 biennium. Now, those 85-87 numbers are very tentative because they're based on the idea that costs would not increase or decrease and the patient population would not, but that is our expectation. Do you have any questions that I could answer for you?
Representative Gordon, your investigation as to what the feds would do, when, how far?
Okay, we researched available material on the federal regulations using the Commerce Clearinghouse for one source. They publish a Medicare, Medicaid guide that interprets nationally the policy of the federal government in this area. We use that as one of our sources, and of course, the survey that we conducted was intended to verify if other states had similar interpretations, just in case we were missing something that, an angle that we had not considered for obtaining reimbursement, put it that way.
So you talked to some feds, some Washington office, to get their interpretation of guilty, except for incentive?
We did not talk directly, at least I did not, directly to the federal government people, because their policy has been stated over a number of years through both the Medicare and Medicaid programs, so we looked to the reference rather than calling an office.
Now, it's my understanding that the guilty except for insanity, that particular verdict is unprecedented in the nation. Is that correct?
I don't really have an answer for your question. I had not encountered that wording in my research, so.
Well, the wording that you did encounter and you compared this to was guilty but mentally ill.
That is correct.
We discussed that when we came up with this version. This was Jeff Rogers' specific language, if you call, Mr. Chair. And the reason he came up, except for insanity versus but mentally ill, was a Herculean reason in the sense that it's a totally different verdict in terms of the qualifications of those final three words. And I, so Walt Berry is your certified smart legal advisor in terms of deciding whether or not this gets the money from the feds. Is that right?
Well, it was his opinion that it would stand a very good chance of us not being able to get that money. You know, he could not be absolutely sure. Just as when I looked at it compared it to the other information, I realized it was a difference in wording. So you cannot, or we could not say absolutely.
Further questions for Mr. Olson by members of the subcommittee? Just to get this straight, you thought there would be an increase of 30 patients per year, but the proposed amendments took care of that. Is that right?
That is right.
And the proposed amendments are the amendments that we voted on, or what amendments do you specifically?
Okay, speaking of the amendments that I believe were furnished to us by Linda Zuckerman, they're dated 5/23/83, they're House Bill 2075-2.
All right. So your only concern in terms of the mental health division is the guilty except for insanity. Is that correct?
Okay. The only thing that I could really address on that would be the revenue or fiscal impact. So I don't know whether there's other concerns. They were not expressed to me before I came to the hearing, but I can't really answer for the division on that.
All right. Further questions? Linda?
The effect on revenue part is the federal monies that you're concerned that we wouldn't get, right?
It's largely federal money. There is some billing to the patient where the patient has money of his own.
Okay.
He is responsible for paying now under the law.
That what?
He is now responsible under the law to pay if he is able to pay.
Would that change?
Yes, that would change also.
The effect on expenditures, where did that come from?
Okay, the effect on expenditures that is stated there is merely a shift of money from being able to bill the patient or his Medicare, Medicaid, or insurance to having those expenditures paid by general funds. There is a small amount shown as additional general funds, I believe, on the fiscal analysis. However, that's just a bookkeeping method of showing how the funding works. It's not really a true increase in state costs.
Is the net impact an increased state funds and what you see under effect on revenue?
Yes.
Thank you for your
testimony. Thank you.
Do you want me to go on?
Yes, please.
instruction was to define specially designated offense for purposes of special PSRB jurisdiction to mean aggravated murder or attempt to commit aggravated murder, felony sex offenses in the first degree, or attempts of such. Those, that definition is provided in Section 2 of the bill. There was an issue raised by Representative Hill at the last meeting that he might want to take another look at the felony sex offense categories, and I did make copies and I'll distribute the statutes from the criminal code relating to felony sex, relating to sex offenses.
Chairman, would it be your pleasure to go over that list of offenses? There was some question about it.
Right.
Well, first of all, sexual abuse in the first degree, of course, it is one of the first degree sex offenses. In light of your concept, Representative Courtney is trying to stick to the most heinous offenses. That, frankly, was not one of the ones that I would have thought would be one of the ones to be included. That's ORS 163.425. However, excluding that offense, however, there may be the possibility that there were, as my research indicated, perhaps two other offenses that we may wish to include. And that's sodomy in the second degree, which is ORS 163.395. I think perhaps would be considered a heinous enough offense to come into this category. Also, sexual penetration with a foreign object in the second degree, which is ORS 163.408. And I bring those to the attention of the committee. We're trying to delineate the serious offenses. And my goal would be to eliminate sexual abuse in the first degree from the list and add those two other offenses to the list. And that would just be open for discussion from the committee. Discussion? If you'd like that in the form of a motion, Mr. Chairman, I'll make it, and then we can discuss it and go from there.
Okay. Does this motion include 40395, 408, and 425? 425 being excluded, and 408 and 4395 being included?
Yes.
Discussion of the motion to the amendments. Representative Hill?
I've got Springer. Now, can you point out again, I'm sorry, a part of the proposed amendments or the bill we're working off of?
Section 2.
Section 2.
Subsection 2, right.
And do we have a printed amendment? I'm sorry, Representative Hill. Your amendment is to...
Okay.
What are you going to do with this?
It would be to delete sexual abuse in the first degree, which is ORS 163.425, because it's not the heinous offenses that we were trying to get here, but it would include sodomy in the second degree, which is 163.395,
and penetration with a foreign object in 163408. Oh, I'm sorry.
He wants to take out 425.
If you remember, Representative Miller, when we started out, sexual offenses were not in the bill at all. Mm-hmm. And the concept, as Representative Courtney had, only aggravated murder. Now, there's another issue of a murder period. But with all the work that was done on the committee, in the Armed Committee, and the work's done by Representative Courtney, I did not want to weigh this down unnecessarily, but this struck me that there were certain sexual offenses that were serious enough that they should be here. Now, the reason I basically looked at those as being sexual offenses in the first degree. As it turns out, sexual abuse, and I'm not saying that it's not a serious crime, it's just not a, I considered the sodomy in the second degree and sexual penetration with a foreign object to me as being the type of crime that we would want to pay special attention to. You can see what is covered in sexual abuse in the first degree, and it simply did not rise to that aggravated murder standard. And I'm just trying to keep to the more serious sexual offenses, and that's the whole point. And see, sodomy in the second degree and sexual penetration in the second degree with a foreign object, those were not, would not be covered in the bill as it is amended now.
Commissioner Lombard.
Representative Hill, if you do include 163408 in your particularly heinous or objectionable category, then shouldn't you probably also include 163365, rape in the second degree?
Yes, Ms. Zuckerman just mentioned that to me, and I would agree with that.
Okay.
Well, now I know we're getting to the point, I don't want to weigh this down, Representative Courtney, so if you have any comments.
Yeah, can we do this? Let's go back. Would you withdraw your motion? Let's do it another way. Withdraw your motion, please.
I will.
All right. How about a motion on 365? What you want to do with 365? You want it in, right, Representative Bill? I'm now referring to ORS 163.365. You'd like to include that. Objections to the amendment Representative Hill has put forward. You also have a motion on 163.395, correct?
That's correct.
Objections to that? Now, you have also an amendment to include 163.408, correct?
That's correct.
Objections to that? Now, you want to exclude from the first degree offenses as outlined in ORS Chapter 163, 163.425, is that correct?
That's correct.
Are there objections to this?
I'll object.
You want to discuss it?
I'd like to include it.
All right.
All right.
That concludes my
analysis and objections and motions. Are there objections with the exception of Randy Miller?
Did you say to me or about me?
The record show Representative Miller has done what he wanted to do on 425. Proceed.
Was that last motion to delete 163?
To delete from section 2, subsection 2 of the amendments,
163.425. Got it. Thank you.
What now? Take it out of there.
Okay.
Take it out. Anything further on this section?
Yes, Chairman. Was pointed out again by counsel the issue of murder. We only deal with aggravated murder.
Do
Do we want to leave it to aggravated murder or...
Questions, comments, motions by members of the committee? Representative Lombardo.
Well, I think that my inclination would be to expand the murder section, but I don't have those.
Is that in these, it's all sexual.
163-115,
excuse me.
Echo.
Where's Hardy?
I don't know where Hardy is, he flew the coop. Representative Lombardo, do you have a motion on that?
Just look here. Yeah, I would say let's include 163-115.
All right. 115. Representative Lombardo moves 163-115 be included in section 2, subsection 2. Now, is there any other murdering things that you, statute you want to bring in there, Representative Lombardo?
Well, I was just going the way the court, the way the chair likes to run things and do bang the gavel an extra number of times, so I thought I'd give a chance to bang the gavel once and then we'd look again.
Discussions, comments? Objections? Is that going to do it in terms of what we've, that about do it?
Subsection 8 on page 13, that has to do with conditional release, whether initiated by the mental health division or a person or someone on behalf of the person. It provides it, although it, meaning the PSRB, may conditionally release such a person, in no case shall the board discharge any person placed under its jurisdiction for having committed a specially designated offense until the person has remained under the jurisdiction for at least, and it's got 30 years for subsection 1 of the aggravated murder statute, 20 years for the other subsection, and the maximum period which the person could have been sentenced upon conviction for commission of felony sex offenses or attempts to do such in case in each of those. There's one complication that arises from murder being included, because murder is now a life sentence. Is there some sort of a time period that the committee wants to set on a murder, which otherwise, if it's a specially designated offense, if you made subject to the same provisions, then PSRB would not be able to discharge an aggravated murder person for 20 or 30 years, but they would not be able to discharge a murder person possibly for life. Well, actually, it's not addressed at all, but that's the issue.
No.
163115 doesn't. Murder under 163115 is not made a Class A felony. The subsection 3 of that section says a person convicted of murder shall be punished by imprisonment for life. Because you set time limits for, you know, in felony sex offenses, you know, if they're in Class A or Class B, it's going to be 20 or 10 year maximums. That they will retain jurisdiction over the person who would otherwise have been found guilty. In murder, you've got a life sentence. An aggravated murder, we chose.
Right, 30 years.
The minimum.
30 to 20.